Hi, my name is Gunnar Froh and I'm your host on the Wunder Mobility podcast. Hey, welcome to the Wunder Mobility podcast. I'm often asked which other podcasts we're listening to, and one that I would totally recommend is The Rideshare Guy from Harry Campbell. Harry is a fascinating person who knows everything about the ride-hailing industry. He's not only been an Uber driver, he's probably the only one who's then also interviewed the Uber CEO, Dara, twice. He claims to have talked to more than 50,000 rideshare drivers in the last 7 years, and I believe it, he knows everything about the industry, airing once a week as The Rideshare Guy. And now over to my conversation with Martinez from Trafi. Today, I'm with a real veteran from the new mobility space. Martinez from Trafi, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Your company is super interesting. Your background is super interesting. You already have a very long time now in new mobility. And so I'm super glad that you're here. The podcast is basically the little brother of the summit that we like to host in the fall as Wunder Mobility, and last fall we couldn't because of the pandemic. And so you are one of the people that we would have loved to have on the stage then. Your company is super interesting, was for a longer time, and more you are also really successful in the market. You're really like leading one important idea for new mobility. Can you talk a little bit about what your company does? What's the product that you have?
Thanks, Gunnar, first of all, for inviting me. I appreciate being here and having a chat, you know, and in this special circumstances, right, that we all live at the moment. So would be very happy to be on stage, you know, as I said, you know, in the summit. But we are where we are. Yeah, not really a veteran, I would say, first of all, but you know, I can probably spend a bit more time in the industry to be able to call me like that. But look, Trafi is an interesting company, and we started quite a lot of year ago because it was basically a hobby project which started by my co-founder and CTO, you know, Jurgis. He graduated from MIT in US, you know, and he basically came back to Lithuania and started to write the first routing algorithms, how to go from point A to point B. And those routing algorithms became a website, and that website became a journey planner, you know, and schedules for public transport sort of, you know, web. And then it became one of the most popular websites in the country in general, in Lithuania. And after that, fast forward, you know, a couple of years from that website, Jurgis and myself, we were living in London, and Jurgis was doing PhD, you know, and finishing the physics, you know, in PhD in string theory as a hobby. And I was working at InMobi, which was then back in the day one of the largest mobile advertising networks globally. And then we were hanging out, you know, and we were figuring, you know, what should we do with Trafi and with that hobby project of ours. And we presented that to the venture capital guys, you know, in 2013. We raised the first seed round of investment and we relocated. We came back to Lithuania. Effectively, that was one of the requests from the venture capital folks who were in Lithuania. And we started to build a team and we started to basically craft the mobility as a service platform. We took us quite a bit of years to do that. You know, people think it's, you know, it's just an app or something. You know, that's what you see. It's a tip of the iceberg. But it really took us quite a lot of years to build that to a world-class thing.
What does your app do now for everybody who hasn't heard it or maybe knows it under a different name because you're also licensing the technology? But what does it do for an end consumer? What does it look like?
Yeah, for the end consumer, it is a mobility as a service product that allows you to register once, you know, put your payment credentials once, and that's it. And then you can consume and use any type of transportation which is in the platform integrated, you know, any type of mobility service provider. So, you know, from tiers to voice, you know, and then limes and then birds of micromobility to, you know, car sharing, ride hailing and all of the other things. And of course, including the backbone of every city transportation, which is a public transport. So full suite of different transport modes under one roof in one platform with one account. And with one, you know, single payment option, that's what gives you the frictionless experience and a very seamless experience to consume transportation in one place. So that is essentially what mobility as a service is, you know, and that's what we are providing either to our own users or either through our white label platform to the users of the products that we work with many cities around the world.
You were one of the first mass aggregators to really build a product like that. And it's like conceptually for everybody who is interested in new mobility, one of the very interesting aspects. We have a number of operators, we have public transport and so on, but who as a consumer really wants to have all of these on his phone, maybe go around from one to the other, maybe if you had one key to access them all, that's conceptually very interesting. But then you basically also managed to partner with some very big cities to launch this for them and maybe under a different name for the city. In Germany, very notably for Berlin and Munich, but you also have others and like very internationally now that you're launching. Is this sort of the core of your business going towards cities? And we can imagine more and more cities would want to maybe put a wrapper around everything that's going on in their city and give them the technology, or is that just one of many parts of your business to go after cities like that?
Yeah, it's one of the main ones for sure. You know, it's a fundamental part of Trafi, you know, and we call it Trafi for cities internally. Mm-hmm. You know, so the white label platform is absolutely a fundamental part. However, it's not the only one, because you can divide cities probably globally now into two different categories, you know, broadly speaking. There are cities who wants to have white label offering and they want to operate that white label offering themselves. So they want to put mm-hmm. their brand on it. They want to, you know, have the city colors, you know, on it. They want to operate it basically. And they're ready to pay money for it. They have budgets for it. They run for tendering processes. They do marketing and operations and customer support and everything what's needed to run a successful consumer-facing product. So there is that category of cities, and those are usually big cities, you know, like mm-hmm. with bigger budgets and more mobility service providers in their cities. But there are other category of cities that says, you know, we don't want to operate these products, you know, we don't necessarily have big budgets, or even if we do have budgets, we are not certain we're going to be good at operating consumer-facing products as a transport authority. You know, that's not our core skill sets, if you will, or not our core know-how. And then they ask, you know, hey, Trafi, could you come and launch in our city with your own branded solution? So you could think about these two categories as cities who want white label and operate it themselves, and cities who doesn't want white label, and they allow other private players to come and operate in their city. And they then open up, you know, the ticketing API. They work with mobility service providers to integrate with that offering. They do the regulation, you know, some sort of orchestration, you know, for mobility as a service. So yeah, I would put, you know, this into those two categories, and those both we serve. And then we have, of course, you know, a few other interesting business lines like technology licensing, for example. We do license our technology to companies like Google, for example, right? And others. And they are using our tech to enhance and to fine tune the Google Maps product. What does it mean? It means like when you're using Google Maps and you do a route search, or you check, you know, any type of related information with public transport in a good number of cities globally, that goes through our platform, and that goes through our software, which is big editing software to make public transport information much better quality and higher quality and much more accurate than you would get directly from transport authority. So we are doing this thing, you know, too, with the global giants, you know, and then our technology is creating an impact, you know, for, you know, 50, 60 million people on a daily basis and through showing, you know, public transport information in a much better quality way. So we have a couple of just different business lines, you know, which is mm-hmm. interesting.
So you've built a technology layer that improves public transport data so that can be shown maybe in a city branded app, in your own branded app, or, you know, pushed to other tech players like Google Maps. And you mentioned in the beginning, of course, you're showing the different operators in a city. What's your relationship with these operators? Because maybe not all of them want to be shown in an aggregator. Maybe they want to prefer to push their own brand. But is it typically a setup that cities would mandate that they do this? Or is that on a voluntary basis to come with you? Or is even the opposite true, that they like to be shown here because it's maybe extra traffic? How does that relationship setting it up work?
I think it's a little bit of everything, what you mentioned. You know, it's a bit of a mix. First of all, of course, you know, when city creates a mobility as a service offering, you know, with the help of our technology, they are the owners or they are the operators of the largest transportation service in the city, which is public transport. You know, you cannot find the larger and more important transportation provider than a public transport network in every city, right? I mean, which moves, you know, millions of people every day in the bigger cities on a daily basis. So every time, you know, city creates a mobility as a service offering, you know, on our platform, the public transport is a backbone of it. And then, you know, they go into the mobility service providers and they have a chat with them and basically they discuss, hey guys, do you want to be part of that? Because, you know, it's going to create tons of demand because we're going to make sure that this product is going to be official and a default transportation consumption product for the citizens of our city. So you guys, integrate together with us and we, you know, make sure you're going to generate enough demand, you know, because, you know, already the numbers of people we're moving on a daily basis. We want to completely digitize this and we want that every single transaction, consumption, surge, and any type of usage of transportation would go through our platform. And mobility as a service would basically be that city-wide label platform would be a default product when you think about moving in that particular city. So that's a promise. That's what city does. And then they discuss with MSPs, you know, and basically they all integrate together and they are very friendly, you know, absolute majority of MSPs, you know, are a great partners, you know, with cities, with us, you know, and they don't hesitate to integrate. Though there are a few that, as you said, you know, there are still keeping, you know, their user base very, very close to their chest. But I think this is a bit of a wrong sort of approach because it's not that they are losing that user base or it's not that they are losing the vision into what, you know, the people who are using their services through mobility as a services product would do and so on and so forth. There are technical ways how to solve that so that every single mobility service provider who is integrated within MaaS platform would clearly know about those people and would clearly know about the users, of course, in a fully anonymized way, but what they do, how they use transportation, so they are not missing out of anything. And lately, what we see as a big trend that absolute majority of those mobility service providers really care about their fleet utilization. So they're really trying to optimize towards that, which not necessarily was the case about, you know, 3-2 years ago, but definitely going towards that direction.
Are you taking a cut from these mobility service providers or are the cities that you're operating for, basically that you're hosting, taking a cut?
We are not aware about the direct deal, you know, between mobility service provider and a city. That's really their prerogative, you know, to strike a deal and to have any type of commercial offering between a city and mobility service provider. So we are not, you know, going into those discussions and being there. But when mobility service providers also integrate with Traffy as a platform, we never ask for any cut. We just want to provide as wide choice, you know, to our user base as possible, you know, through our own products, through the city products. So no, the short answer is no, we do not take any cuts.
And do you see some cities mandating that if you want to be an operator in my city, you now have to also list in my city MaaS platform, or do you think that's not happening?
We do see this increasingly, you know, being, let's say, discussed and being on the table, you know, because when mobility service providers are entering the cities, they need to obtain the license to operate usually in that city, you know, whereas if it's a micro-mobility provider or a car sharing or a ride hailing, they need to get certain license or a certain permission, you know, to go into the city. So cities are, you know, looking into the ways how to, you know, make the integration into an official mobility as a service platform of the city a part of that grant or a license or a permit. Even though they never want to go with the stick model, you know, to say like, hey, you absolutely need to integrate or we're going to throw you out. No, I mean that's not what's happening. You know, we see a lot of friendly discussions and a lot of very collaborative approach, very constructive discussions. And I haven't seen that cities really need to go into that direction of threatening, you know, somebody that we're going to revoke the license or something. But we all know they have this card in their pocket. So if they want to use it, they can use it. Well, so far we haven't seen this being used a lot, but we've seen those discussions happening.
Yeah, very interesting. I think in the case of Airbnb, when they had their relationships with cities, they were kind of very mixed and sometimes seen critically, and their like describing now how, as a result of the pandemic, a lot of cities have changed their attitude a lot, because on the one hand, now they want extra tourism, but also they have their budgets so strained that now they are more and more approaching Airbnb to strike the deals to collect also some taxes, some local taxes. Now, you mentioned basically that something has shifted in mobility service providers definitely want the utilization of their fleets up. So any additional traffic is good traffic at the moment. What else do you think maybe has changed as a result of the pandemic when it comes to your business model or your product? Is there any acceleration or change because of that?
Yeah, we absolutely seen the acceleration. You know, even during the COVID year in 2020, we managed to grow our revenues about 80% year on year, you know, versus 2019. So, you know, we were very, you know, grateful and humble in that situation, you know, looking all over the overall, you know, market conditions and what was happening. We saw a very sizable increase in the new tenders for mobility as a service this quarter in Q1, as well as last quarter in Q4 versus a year ago. And I think that's a mix of reasons for that. You know, first of all, also cities woke up after COVID, seeing that if we as a city want to steer the behavior of our people when we need that, when some of the things like pandemic happens, we do need a digital platform to do that. We do need to have a tools, you know, and means to do that. And they like woke up and felt like, We don't. Usually there are 95% of cities that doesn't have any of these platforms that are transactional, that are, you know, mobility as a service, that with bunch of providers integrated, because they wanted the first responders, the medical workers, other people that need to go to work being, you know, they wanted to provide the mobility credits maybe, or mobility budgets for these people, you know, to go to work, you know, maybe free of charge as a part of motivation from the city, or giving them a huge discount, you know, if they need to work and commute to work during the pandemic times. Or they wanted to switch people, you know, in the very first days of pandemic, when everything was like still very hard, we didn't know what's going to happen. The cities wanted to switch people maybe from public transportation and huge crowd that, you know, buses, to maybe a single occupancy shared mobility modes. But to do that, to incentivize all of this, to kind of try to steer and change the behavior, you need to have mobility as a service platform. You know, you need to have this digital mean to do that. Otherwise, you can't. And that was quite a bit of reasons that cities, you know, approached to us and told us that, hey, we really want to have this now. You know, we saw the success of not only other cities having deployed mobility as a service deployments, like, you know, Berlin, for example, which is a northern star in the whole mass world, but also others, plus pandemic, plus a mix of those reasons, plus lots of cities started to invest in infrastructure and do a bike lanes, you know, cycling paths. They really started to invest in that as part of pandemic, you know, and not only temporary, but for good. Increased choices of transportation in general led to a situation where we really see now mobility as a service picking up. And last but not definitely least reason is the general sustainable movement and the way the people travel. You know, it absolutely is on the very high on the agenda of every mayor in almost every city, virtually, at least in Europe, to figure out how the people in my city can travel in a sustainable way. So how to promote shared mobility rather than your own private vehicles. And that's one of the also biggest reasons.
So it sounds like cities are using your MaaS platform to drive policy goals, maybe by just having a MaaS platform at all, first of all, so you can like more easily discover new choices and switch between operators. But do you also see some customization in that? Maybe are there examples of cities that would say, whatever converts best, that's fine, but I want, for example, bikes to be always shown on top. So I always want the bike option first or something. Or show the cars or the ride hailing at the bottom, please. Do you have requests like that where cities really want to influence behavior by positioning? And then do you have to customize between cities based on what they want to drive?
Mm-hmm. we not only have the request for that, we build tools to enable them to do that, you know, in-house, so that we don't need to, you know, go and fine-tune the algorithms, you know, in every city. So we have a, you know, we call it a routing configurator, right? I mean, that that cities can, you know, apply weights of modes, you know, and types and providers and whatnot. And if they want to have a week without a private car, and let's say, or a month of cycling, right? So they show that cycling options or biking options or micromobility options or whatever other things, you know, or even walking, you know, always in the first place, because that's the most healthiest and, you know, carbon neutral way to travel. It's actually walking. So absolutely, that's what's happening. And we see that. And again, not only see, we build tools to enable cities to do that, you know, in a very easy manner, if they want to customize the routing results, you know, for them. Yeah.
That's very fascinating. Very direct and probably efficient kind of low cost way for cities to, you know, introduce or highlight certain options or maybe new.
Yeah, but you're right. You know, it's interesting that it goes into a funnel in a way, as you said. You know, first of all, they want just to try mobility as a service platform because it's still a new thing. You know, it's not something that's been around for years and years, right? I mean, it's still innovation. It's still very, very few cities around the world has a real mobility as a service deployment, you know, with lots of integrations, with the true one account, you know, framework, with the, you know, multiple payments framework and a very frictionless experience, you know, for the
What's
user.
Your guess, maybe, by the way, I think you know this much better than like our listeners, but let's say only in Europe, for example, how many, so there are 600 cities with more than 100,000 inhabitants. Maybe that's even too low. We're only targeting really big cities, but how many cities across Europe even have something like this at this point?
Yeah, I wouldn't tell you like exact number, but you know, approximately to the best of the knowledge that we have, you know, recently there are maximum 15 cities that has, you know, some sort of a more real mobility as a service offering, you know, some of that
super piloting early stuff.
It's super early, and then, you know, we are happy to be the pioneers here and having the largest amount of those cities. Not only in Europe, but globally too. If you would think about the amount of deployments that all mobility as a service, you know, products and then providers have, Trafi is number one globally now, you know, based on the deployments. So yeah, it's still early days, and it goes through the funnel of discovery, goes through the funnel of providing an optionality to their own people, to their own citizens, because if you want to get rid of the private cars, and if you want to get rid of the traffic jams, and you want to make the city more livable, greener, more sustainable, you need to work in both directions. You need to, you know, taxate maybe a car ownership or entering the city centers more and so on, so that it's not the best option. But on the other hand, you need to create alternatives for all those people who have cars, right? I mean, they just can't throw their cars away. And if the city doesn't provide, as an institution, it doesn't provide, you know, any alternative, great, seamless options. So mobility as a service is those alternatives. That's a tool to bring optionality and to bring shared mobility to the masses. And after they do that, they're going into the next stage, as you say, starting to steer the behavior, starting to change that behavior, and maybe even customizing the results that people see and pushing more people to use even more climate neutral ways within the shared mobility environment, right? I mean, so it's a very interesting path what's happening that we see, but it's a still early stage, you know, baby steps in there. But super fascinating what's waiting, you know, for us in the next 5 years.
Yeah. How do you see your own business model evolving? Because when you do licensing for cities, I think that it's probably very attractive in the beginning. Tenders could be interesting amounts, but then maybe they don't scale that extremely. It's hard to imagine a city paying eventually, you know, really large amounts in licensing fees. Probably it's not so like per transaction driven or so. Is there something that you can already share about maybe stages that you're going to go through, or how this is going to work out for you when you provide this much value to, you mentioned 50, 60 million people kind of indirectly at least touch this data on a daily basis?
So the beauty of Trafi platform, holistically speaking, is that, again, we are not only working with cities, right? We are working with the big technology providers, you know, and we have a different business model for different business lines, if you will, you know. So for the cities, it is a software as a service, you know, licensing fees at the moment. And I think it's going to stay there for some time, you know. That's what cities are used to. That's what they like, you know. Public institutions, as you may be very well aware, they don't like very new, innovative things, you know. They're not feeling comfortable necessarily with that. So they like what they know, where they're comfortable in, and we're trying to adapt a little bit towards that. But also, on the other hand, we're looking into a new business models. And for example, you know, cities and citizens are super interesting, super important, but what about corporates? What about businesses? You know, this is the segment that is really keen in, you know, using mobility as a service for their own employees, you know, commuting, for their own employees' business traveling. So we having in the last couple of months such a big inbound of requests from big corporates, bigger and smaller ones, you know, like really wide array of that. How can we as a corporate, you know, decrease our carbon footprint? And there are multiple ways to do that. But when you drill down, you know, and dig deeper, there are some of the ways that are bigger than the others. And transportation is absolutely one of the top things that commuting and business traveling that really adds up to that, you know, carbon footprint of every businesses that are live, you know. So the question is, how can they offset this? And if their people are usually commuting with their own cars, you know, to work, or they even have corporate cars, you know, and some more traditional ways of using, you know, transportation, they want to change that. They want to steer the behavior, and they need a product for that. And mobility as a service is a perfect product. You know, if you can also adjust, you know, some of the functionalities that you can give corporates ability to manage allowances, mobility budgets, some credits, some incentives, you know, that if my employee is using a greener way of transportation, a more climate neutral way of mobility service provider, I might incentivize him or her, you know, to do that even more, as of they might not only use it for the business purposes or commuting, but also for their own personal stuff to go over the weekend, you know, if they really trying to change that behavior.
Are you launching a mobility budget, basically?
Correct. It's not only mobility budget. It's just one type of thing there. So we're launching a complete traffic for business suit for, you know, smaller, medium-sized businesses, as well as the large corporates very, very soon. And it's going to be live in the multiple locations across Europe and across the world.
That's super exciting. And is it going to focus on the daily commute or also trying to cover business travel? And
both.
Then ideally extend into also private usage for these employees.
Correct. Because, you know, really corporates and especially the big ones, which has a impact and they employ, you know, really thousands and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, they have enormous impact, you know, for the whole climate change and carbon neutrality topic. And they started, you know, to really act and they started to really put the money where their mouth is. And this is super exciting because they can influence, you know, commuting, which is every day and really, you know, produces a tons of emissions. They can influence the business traveling, which is happening on the ground in the city or between cities, because we're not tackling, you know, air travel or you know, long-term, long-haul, you know, business travel, but what's happening within the urban area with you. And then, as you very rightly said, everything what you're using, you know, and if you're using it in a nice way that's being said by the car corporate as a policy and you're doing it well, they might even incentivize you to and give some credits to use for your personal needs. So this is super, super exciting. And corporates are seeing themselves as a very interesting stakeholder in offsetting those emissions and being a driving force, you know, to do that. And imagine the biggest corporates will start doing that. What the effect they will create, you know, for every one of us. So it's a super exciting, you know, opportunity in front of us.
Is the more important pain point for these corporate clients CO2 footprint or cost reductions? Which, I mean, I think it's not a bad thing either or, and maybe it's both driving into it. But I would imagine just the times that we're in and that companies are in, maybe even cost is the primary focus, or am I wrong in that?
We do not see that much, you know, as cost would be a primary driver, you know, in these decisions. We absolutely see the CO2 emission footprint, you know, as a primary cost. We see corporates having it very high on their board meeting agenda, like, what have I done as a business, as a corporate in the last quarter or a couple of quarters to offset my emissions? What are the exact things that we've done? You know, one thing is just to buy a green credits or something, you know, if you have money. And sort of say that I'm offsetting, you know, and that's about it. But it becomes really a topic of we need to do it genuinely, and we need to act. You know, we need to start changing the way we do things, you know, on a normal basis and in the normal occasions. And that's what's happening. So it's less about the cost saving. At least that's what we see, more about a CO2 footprint as well as energy footprint. So it's not only about, hey, just going from, you know, fossil fuel, you know, things and or combustion engines into electric engines, but also looking into what is the energy footprint? You know, do I need, you know, to spend a much energy to commute? Can I have a sort of a lower energy ways of using transportation? So it's a mix of that.
Is Trafi for Business going to be a transaction-based model for you then somehow, or also kind of a licensing model for cities?
Yeah, we're gonna see that. We are, you know, experimenting with the business model as it's a new thing, you know, still for us. So it's yet to be seen where we're going to land, you know, with the right business model. We're definitely gonna experiment, you know, in the different angles, and we'll see what's good for us, what's good for corporates, you know, so that we all have the right incentive, you know, us, corporates, and people that are using it.
That's a very cool, interesting evolution. You're probably very well positioned to have a good product there. Is that something you were already planning like some years ago? And that's like kind of sometimes you hear, you read like a Tesla blog and they say, okay, this is the plan for the next 10 years, step, step, step. And then you're wondering if that really exists or just was given to you also partially in hindsight. But was this like a plan from the beginning or something that kind of you are bringing about after conversations in the market and so on, this idea kind of evolved step by step based on the reactions that you got?
It evolved. You know, I can't say like, hey, we were like super visionary, you know, when we saw this 5 years ago coming. No, you know, we did not. But where we started see it coming when we started to work a lot with cities and we started to generate, you know, the mobility as a service platform, you know, in the multiple cities. And that became super interesting for the people to use for their personal usage. And it was, you know, really picked up by corporates and saying, hey, if it's really interesting and very seamless, you know, for the people, how can I bring this to my own employees and how can I steer this and create some sort of incentives, plans, you know, and budgets and whatnot? Because also people inside these corporates, especially the younger generation, is asking, why do I need to use only one preferred mode that companies strike the deal with if I can use potentially any type of transportation to go to my meeting or to commute to my home? You know, I might even use public transportation, you know, if that makes sense, you know, to some extent. I might want to use micromobility. I might want to use ride hailing when it's also needed. I might want to take a car sharing vehicle. I want to have a choice, you know. I want to have a choice and I want my employer to have a partner and a platform that enables that choice, which is seamless for me as an employee. I don't need to collect receipts. I don't need to do any of that from different providers. And I don't need to have, you know, 20 different apps on my phone. I just need to have one and I can consume everything for that one. Whereas on the employer side, I need one invoice per month for all of my employees traveling and commuting, you know, with different modes of transportation. And I want to be able to set the programs, plans, incentives, and steer the behavior, you know, to offset the carbon footprint. So that came very naturally as an evolution of our mobility as a service white label product. And you know, working with cities also and being number one in this game, you know, also gives us a bit of an unfair advantage, you know, to go into that direction and really sets us into a pole position for the corporate and traffic for business future as well.
Very fascinating. The whole area of new mobility, you are a leader in it, providing technology to others, licensing for cities, the whole role of cities that you're also facilitating and driving, and now activating businesses into this as well to give their employees more choice and maybe be more proactive about how they travel and what their carbon footprint is. Super cool. Thank you for sharing all these insights into what you've already built and what's about to come. That's super fascinating, super interesting. Thanks a lot.
No, my pleasure. Absolutely. Thanks for inviting and, you know, happy to be here. And by the way, one question I guys have, you know, to you, I saw you started to not only provide, you know, the software, the fleet management and everything that you guys do, but also vehicles sort of, you know, and wonder basically vehicle. Can you tell me a little bit about that part, which is fascinating?
Makes me think again about, was this the great plan from the beginning or just a reaction? Because that's how it came about. Also as a reaction, when you are providing technology to operators of shared mobility, the problems typically don't come from the software, but actually from the hardware or interaction software and hardware. So mm-hmm. we were basically advising operators a lot on which vehicles to probably choose, which mopeds, which kick scooters, what's an e-bike I can rely on. And so as a first step, year and a half ago, we were just building a catalog basically and saying, these are the ones we recommend. And then going to manufacturers saying, by the way, I buy a lot of these now, so maybe we should enter into like a distribution partnership. But then we went a step further and we now have a hardware team in-house and we have co-development partnerships with some manufacturers where we say, I take your vehicle and then please make these and these and these modifications, what I've learned from my operator clients, and then I will distribute this vehicle into the market. And so we now have a subsidiary basically, which is called Wunder Vehicles with mm-hmm. its own team, own P&L and so on, who is entering into development partnerships with manufacturers to improve vehicles for the sharing case. So it's easier to operate, longer lasting, longer lifetimes, and then distributing those. And we think that we basically influence 70-80% of the vehicle choices of our operator clients. Typically, they're not necessarily super tied to having one brand. It's a lot about metrics and performance. So if you can point out a vehicle that's more durable or easier to operate, then they're very interested in switching there. So we've extended the software business, now also Wunder Vehicles. And then a third piece in this that's also another evolution afterwards is then financial services. There's mm-hmm. a subsidiary called Wunder Financial Services. So you can, as an operator, just take the software, or we might recommend a vehicle. And if you want, we also finance this. So you can basically get it either on a monthly basis or even in a revenue share setup.
Gotcha. So you guys going into a more of a vertical integrated way of providing a full area of services, you know, from software to hardware to even financial ones. That's super interesting.
Idea is that in the value chain for shared mobility afterwards, so after the vehicle, the software, the financing, it's operations and marketing. And that for a lot of operators, this is where they can really differentiate on the operations and marketing, and that it makes sense to use a platform to procure vehicles and software. Yeah. And it was kind of a reaction to the market, always going with what are they talking about? What is the pain point? And can we potentially organize this better in a platform way rather than each operator going to China maybe and testing all the vehicles and then trying to negotiate about them? It's going to be easier for us to do that for like dozens of operators as one provider.
Cool. Yeah. Interesting. Super interesting.
Yeah. All right. I hope that, our plan is to have the summit this fall. I think either we're vaccinated or we're going to test everybody every day. But I hope that we are going to be able to do it. And you also, of course, invited, would love to see you there. Hope that we see each other in the fall in Hamburg.
Yeah, I would love to be there. Absolutely.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you, guys.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.